The law of attraction is a law of nature. It is impersonal, and it does not say good things or bad things. It is receiving your thoughts and reflecting back to you those thoughts as your life experience. The law of attraction simply gives you whatever it is you are thinking about.
That's Rhonda Byrne reading her book. It's a bestseller, and you've heard about it. The Secret, she claims to have uncovered things that have been hidden for a long time. This great secret about the law of attraction, how the universe works, how life works, and the secret to life's meaning. And she says it's all there in that thin volume, The Secret. And you can also get it on DVD, too, and lots of people have. We're going to be talking about this best-selling book, The Secret, with Marcia Montenegro. She's a former astrologist, founder of Kana, Christian Answers for the New Age, based in Arlington, Virginia. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 27th of June. Marcia Montenegro is author of an article titled The Secret, Cosmic Dream Machine. Marcia, welcome back.
Oh, hello. Thanks so much for having me on, Todd.
I take it from reading your article that much of what Rhonda Byrne is pushing in the DVD and the book The Secret sounds familiar to you.
Yes, it does. What really is being taught in The Secret are the teachings of a movement called the New Thought Movement, which started back with Emanuel Swedenborg in the 18th century, but really flowered in the late 19th and early 20th centuries and became sort of a linchpin of the New Age, or maybe a major influence on the New Age. So the New Age, which I was involved in for a number of years, incorporates many of the teachings that are found in New Thought.
Did you, as you read through The Secret, did you find much of the terminology, the ideas in there, pretty much kind of the boilerplate stuff for your days in the New Age movement?
Yes, much of it was stuff I heard. I did not always follow those teachings in a sense, because I was also involved with Eastern teachings, very much with Zen Buddhism, which is very, in a way, very different from the teachings of New Thought. But some of them I was very familiar with from hearing them. For example, there's the term the universe, which is used throughout The Secret. I mean, it's never explained, but it's referred to all the time. The universe will do this. The universe will respond this way. And I believe that this concept comes from the New Thought teachings that were about God being a divine mind or a universal intelligence. And so God's this impersonal kind of source, and the universe becomes that God. And in the New Age, you would often hear people say, oh, yes, the universe must have wanted me to be here. Or, you can ask for that, and the universe will bring it your way. And it was never explained or defined. It was just sort of an understood concept. But it was an impersonal kind of thing out there that we were connected to, and so it responded to us. But the universe also, in a way, was over us because it might put us in situations that would teach us lessons. And I see it being used in a similar way in The Secret.
I remember a conversation with one of my brothers when he was kind of flirting around with New Age thought some years ago. And he one time said, the universe works in mysterious ways, which is an odd thing since the Bible says the same thing of God. It sounded to me like he just took the word God out and stuck in the word universe. Has Rhonda Byrne, is that as innocent as this is, that she's simply talking about the God that we know as Christians, but she's just calling him the universe?
I don't think so. I think it's a substitute for God, but I don't think that the true God of the Bible is being referred to here, and you can see that in the teachings in the book. In fact, there's a very explicit section in the book where it basically tells the reader that the reader is God. And this is also a New Thought teaching in New Thought. And I want to mention real quickly that New Thought helped bring about three churches, two of which I'm sure many people have heard of, the Christian Science Church, founded by Mary Baker Eddy, and the Unity School of Christianity, often just called Unity, which is not the same as the Unitarian Church, and the Church of Religious Science. And those are the three major churches that exist today that came out of the New Thought movement. And they do share a belief in man having a divine nature. And so Jesus, even though Jesus is talked about and referred to in New Thought, Jesus is really like us, a man like us, who realized his divine nature and came to understand it just as we all can. And when he understood that, he attained Christ consciousness, and that's when he became the Christ. And so the Christ is a title for someone who has this realization, and it's something that anyone can obtain. So Jesus is, you know, put down several notches from who he was, and man is elevated. And certain things are said about the reader, like you are God in a physical body, you are a cosmic being, you are all power, you are all wisdom, you are all perfection, you are magnificence, you are the creator, and you are creating the creation of you, and you is capitalized, on this planet. You are the master of the universe. Now, these quotes come directly from the book, The Secret.
What is this law of attraction? If the word universe appears most in this book, The Secret, mm-hmm. the close second has got to be the phrase law of attraction. What is Rhonda Byrne talking about?
Right. This book is stating that the secret is understanding this law of attraction. There exists this law, and the law is based on the belief that we're all energy, and we put out energy with our thoughts. And so when you put out a certain thought into what they would say the universe, you know, you're thinking, you know, I really would like a new car, or I want a new car, then that thought travels through this energy sphere, and the universe responds. And so if you are thinking in positive ways, not only that you want something, but that you can get it, or that you will get it, which is what they really teach you to do, then it will come to you. And this kind of thinking and writing it out or saying it, which are called affirmations, was taught especially by Ernest Holmes, who founded the Church of Religious Science, and who heavily influenced Norman Vincent Peale. Norman Vincent Peale, in fact, acknowledged that he studied the ideas of Holmes and incorporated them into his teachings on positive thinking. So a lot of people think this is just about being positive or having a positive attitude, and that's not it at all. It's about a technique whereby you believe you can actually bring things into reality from another realm, whatever you want to call it, or the universe will give you something concrete in response to these techniques of how you think about what you want. So there's a definite technique involved. This is not just a fuzzy, you know, have a positive attitude kind of teaching.
This isn't, as you said before, just an idea, but it is a... it has ritual involved in it, doesn't it?
Right. I would call it technique.
Sure.
Because it's more of a, you know, I don't know about the word ritual. I'd have to research the meaning. I know what ritual means in common everyday language. I'd probably call it a technique. But it is, I would definitely say, it is a spiritual teaching. And these are spiritual principles that are being taught here. They're not neutral. It is not a neutral thing because it's based on a spiritual view of who man is and what the source of power is and what the universe is and why we're here. And it clearly comes from New Thought because, in fact, Rhonda Byrne says that the reason that all of this came about is because she read a book by Wallace Wattles about getting rich. It was given to her at a crisis point in her life, and she said it transformed her life, and so she went in search of these teachings and these teachers and made a DVD and then later wrote the book. And Wallace Wattles was a New Thought teacher, And many, many New Thought teachers are quoted in here, including Charles Fillmore, who founded the Unity School of Christianity.
Let's go through a few of those points, if we could, kind of diagnose. You've made the point very well, but let's diagnose it in a little more detail. According to The Secret and its foundation in New Thought, what is man? Who is man?
Right. Man is divine. Man is actually has a divine nature like God, and basically you are a part of God, or we are all kind of God together. So I don't know if, you know, the statements that I read earlier where she was saying, you know, you are magnificence, you are all wisdom, you are all perfection. Those are statements about God in the Bible. That's how God is described in the Bible. So the attributes of God, the eternal attributes of God, are being applied to man.
What is man's dilemma or problem, according to the teachings of The Secret?
Well, our problem is that we aren't thinking correctly. And this is another New Thought teaching, that illness and unhappiness all come from our wrong thinking. And so you have to readjust your thinking. And if you think correctly, then everything will come your way. So our problem is not recognizing, first of all, that we have this divine nature and therefore the ability to practice these techniques in order to have our success in life or get what we want. But also that, you know, that we need to practice these techniques. We're living in this ignorance of who we are and how we can use this power we supposedly have in our thoughts.
And although you've dealt with this in some detail, who or what is God? She uses the term God and then she uses the word universe. What is Rhonda Byrne's conception of God?
Well, based, you know, I don't know her, but based on this book, I would say she has bought into the New Thought concept of God, which is an impersonal force or energy or even a principle. You might say God is a divine principle, or God is a universal energy or universal mind or divine mind, which is what Mary Baker Eddy, who founded the Christian Science Church, taught. God is divine mind. Everything is divine mind, and if we only become in tune with divine mind, then you won't get sick. And, you know, you'll be in harmony with God. So God is definitely impersonal and becomes more of a principle than a person.
So what then is the solution to man's problem? You and I would agree that in Orthodox Christianity, God presents himself in the person of his son, Jesus Christ, as the solution, the savior of man who is lost and condemned in sin, and he becomes the atoning sacrifice. What is the solution for man's dilemma according to The Secret?
Well, according to The Secret, the solution is to get out of your wrong thinking. And this is all New Thought teachings, too. The problem is, as some of them say, the problem is that you're thinking that you're separate from God when actually you're a part of God or part of the divine one. Because, see, the root of the problems with this is their view of God. They don't have a correct view of God. So everything that they teach based on that is going to be faulty. So they don't believe in sin because there's no holy God to sin against. So man doesn't have a dilemma of being in sin and being separated from God by sin. That's not acknowledged. Sin is a state of mind according to teachings in New Thought. So the dilemma is that man is in ignorance and doesn't recognize who he is and is living in this wrong thoughts where he thinks he's limited by certain things when he really needs to understand that he's an unlimited creature. And I would say that's what they would say the answer is. It's ignorance, and you need the right knowledge, and then once you have that, you practice these techniques and you learn to do right thinking to get out of the dilemma.
Marcia Montenegro is our guest. She's founder of Cana, Christian Answers for the New Age, based in Arlington, Virginia. She's authored an article titled The Secret Cosmic Dream Machine. and we're talking about this best-selling book by Rhonda Byrne. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live 27th of June. It's Wednesday. Marcia.
Could I say something real quickly before,
no,
before
please
you
do.
Go on?
Please
I
do.
Want to mention that my article, I have another article on The Secret. You mentioned one on my website. I have one called The Secret, Chicken Bones for the Hungry Soul.
Yeah.
And that's actually the one that was published in the Midwest Christian Outreach Journal. But they both cover similar teachings. And I also, just for your listeners to know, and I don't know that you know this, I have a new website.
Oh, what is it?
And it's www.christiananswersforthenewage.org. It's kind of long, but I didn't have a whole lot of choice in titles because my acronym CANA was already taken. So it's www.christiananswersforthenewage.org, which is the name of my ministry. So thank you. I just wanted to get that in there.
Well, we'll remember that, too. Rhonda Byrne says that the universe does not distinguish between good and bad.
Right.
So here's my question, and if you could do your best, Rhonda Byrne. She seems to assume that everyone's going to seek what is good for them, and that if everyone does, everything kind of works out well. If everyone's practicing The Secret the way she teaches it, well, not everyone has the same sense of good and bad. And if good is purely my subjective definition of what I think is good for me, I can hardly imagine a world where people are practicing The Secret being a very pleasant place to live.
Well, I think the problem is really even more fundamental than that. I don't think there's a recognition of good and evil in here, even though they may use the term good. I know that in the New Age, and it's pretty much true of New Thought, as I understand it, there are no absolutes. There's no absolute good or evil. And even though the term may be used about, you know, something being good for you or your highest good, there's no real recognition of good and evil. It's very amoral. So this would not be seen as a problem to them because they would just think that things are going to work out the way they should. And ultimately, since we are basically divine, we're going to naturally evolve to that divine. You know, we're going to grow better and better naturally. It'll be a natural progression. And this is how people in the New Age think. So there's no concern about, it's subjective. You know, the concept of good is subjective, and it's just based on what people want to think it is. That doesn't bother people with this kind of worldview because they assume everyone's evolving towards a higher spiritual understanding. And so we're all going to get there, you know, in our own way. And so the concept of good and evil is really irrelevant.
Do Rhonda Byrne, the other advocates of The Secret, there are many in the book and the DVD, and generally kind of the New Thought movement, do they claim to be consistent or inconsistent with Christianity? Do they claim Christianity is kind of part and parcel of their thoughts and techniques?
Yes, they certainly do. This was not only in the book, but when Oprah promoted this on two shows in February, she had some of the panel members from The Secret DVD on her show, and a Christian person or a person who said she was a Christian audience asked a question about it. Yes, they say that it fits right in with Christianity and, in fact, that Jesus taught The Secret. And what they do is they quote things out of context. Or they misapply it. They quote what Jesus said in Matthew, if you ask and you believe in your prayers, then you will receive it. And they also quote the kingdom of God is within you. And as far as the quote about if you ask and pray, now that was a quote from them, but what Jesus said was to ask and all things you ask in prayer, believing you will receive. And, of course, then you have to look, and the biblical thing to do is to know what Jesus means by prayer. And, of course, prayer is, as he taught it, submission to God's will. It's not to get things that we want. And you ask in prayer, you ask, it's a way to get close to God and align yourself with his will. But they take it out of context as though Jesus was teaching some kind of technique. And so if you believe you're going to get this, then you ask it, then God will give it to you. And also Michael Beckwith, who's one of the panel members on the DVD and who's also quoted quite a lot in the book, talks about the kingdom of God is within you. And he uses that to say that heaven and hell are states of mind within you and that you make your own heaven and hell within you. But he claims that this is supported by Jesus because Jesus said this. Well, of course, Jesus was talking to the Pharisees, and usually the rendition of that, more accurately as I understand it, is the kingdom of God is amongst you, and he was rebuking the Pharisees for not recognizing that who Jesus was, that he was the Messiah bringing the kingdom of God. So it had nothing to do with, Jesus wasn't telling the Pharisees that the kingdom of heaven was inside them. But this is how, you know, this is how it's interpreted in the secret. And this is a very common saying in the New Age. I heard this a lot. In fact, there's a book called The Kingdom of Heaven is Within You by Tolstoy, which influenced Gandhi, and it influenced me when I did a special project on Gandhi in college. And the whole idea is everything is within you. See, heaven and hell is within you. Divinity is within you. So it's all, it's everything is within you, and the outer externals are just a manifestation of your own inner nature. So if you can recognize the divinity of your inner nature, and if your thoughts are in line with that, and you express those, then the external world has to respond to the internal reality. That is the core of the New Thought teaching and New Age teaching as well.
Marcia Montenegro is a former astrologist. She's founder of Kana, Christian Answers for the New Age, based in Arlington, Virginia. Her website address, www.christiananswersforthenewage.org, christiananswersforthenewage.org. And she's author of an article, The Secret Cosmic Dream Machine. Marcia, thank you for being our guest.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
A better book, let me recommend one, than The Secret, is Our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for June. It is not something hidden for a long time. There are no startling, never-before-discovered revelations there. In fact, Our Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for June presents the Old Testament Psalms, very familiar prayers of the Old Testament, the prayer book of the church, in fact, not in a new light, but in exactly the light they were intended to be read. No new discoveries here. In fact, what our book of the month for June says is that we can find Christ, no hidden secret, Christ in every one of the Old Testament Psalms. The book is called Reading the Psalms with Luther. Each one of the Psalms has a preface by Luther pointing us to Christ in each of the Psalms. The book is $14.99 plus shipping and handling. You can find it at our website address tonight, issuesetc.org. You can also call Concordia Publishing House and ask about Reading the Psalms with Luther. Their number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Audio Open Lines is next. We're going to be listening to a story from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly about prenatal testing for Down syndrome. I want to hear from you on this, the questions I want you to consider. It can very accurately and with relatively little risk diagnose Down syndrome. But should we, especially given the fact that many Down syndrome babies are aborted? We'll be right back.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
We know that most of you listen to Issues, Etc. during your commute home from work. We also realize that since you're still at work, you can't listen to the beginning of Issues, Etc. Well, I have some good news for you. AM 850 KFUO rebroadcast one of the earlier hours of Issues, Etc. weekday evenings at 7. So instead of watching primetime TV, tune in to Issues, Etc. again tonight at 7 right here on AM 850 KFUO.
Sign on at 7. Wake up with inspiration, information, and compelling Christian conversation on the morning show on AM 850 KFUO. Sure, we've got news, weather, and smiles for you, but also features like By the Way, the Meyer Minute, the Religion Roundup, Today's Light, and Portals of Prayer. Plus people like Steve Coleman, Ruth Cook, Nathan Metter, Jane Wilkie, and Lane Berglund. Tune in for the morning show on AM 850 KFUO, 7 a.m. to 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Grassroots groups are feeling a little more freedom today following the Supreme Court's ruling that free speech rights trump government restrictions on political advertising. The High Court voted 5-4 in favor of a looser interpretation of the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law. Kim Troby explains.
2 months before the 2004 elections, Wisconsin Right to Life aired television ads urging constituents to contact Senator Russ Feingold and ask him to stop threatening to filibuster judicial nominees. The problem was, Feingold was up for re-election, and campaign finance law prohibits candidates from being mentioned in ads 60 days prior to a general election, 30 days before a primary. The case made its way to the Supreme Court. Attorney Jim Bopp, who argued on behalf of Wisconsin Right to Life, applauds the stunning decision handed down this week.
Citizens are now free to run broadcast advertising that will hold public officials accountable for their actions in office by informing citizens of what they're doing to us and for us.
Now corporations can fund ads criticizing candidates as long as they're tied to a specific issue. Barbara Lyons of Wisconsin Right to Life says that frees grassroots groups to alert citizens without fear of legal interference.
We'll be looking to see what types of guidelines and regulations are created by the Federal Election Commission and hope they are clear enough to essentially keep officials of citizen organizations out of jail simply because they want to inform the public about actions pending before Congress.
The provision not only applies to labor and corporations, but also special interest groups. For Family News in Focus, I'm Kim Troby.
Justices who voted in favor of Wisconsin Right to Life include Roberts, Alito, Scalia, Kennedy, and Thomas. Thanks to the ruling, ads can now run as late as December, just 1 month before state primaries kick off in Iowa, Nevada, New Hampshire, and South Carolina. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Where do we find Jesus in the Psalms? Reading the Psalms with Luther is our Issues Etc. book of the month for June. For more information, look for the cover of Reading the Psalms with Luther on our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Did you know that the Psalms portray Jesus as our mighty fortress, our shepherd, and our light? Reading the Psalms with Luther, our Issues Etc. book of the month for June.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Here on this Wednesday, 27th of June, we're going to start an hour of audio open lines for the middle part of the program, a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story on the prenatal testing that's being done for Down syndrome. Apparently, and I think a recent guest on the program had mentioned that when this testing is done, it more often than not results in the parent's decision to abort the baby. In fact, many of those babies that are diagnosed, a majority of those babies diagnosed with Down syndrome in the womb are aborted. One of our guests said that's part of the reason why you see fewer and fewer Down syndrome children in the world today, and that's a shame. So the questions I have for you as we listen to this audio are, first of all, the testing is there. It's available. It's only going to improve in its accuracy and probably reduce in its risk. If you, and you don't have to be a parent here, you can think hypothetically, if you were faced with a doctor who said, you know, it's now standard operating procedure at my OBGYN office to test for Down syndrome, you know, they're always trying to reduce risk. That's what doctors, they're trying to make you well, but at the same time, they're trying to reduce personal risk. Nothing wrong with that. Everybody does that in their professions. But they say, this test is something that helps us reduce the risk. Would you say yes? Would you undergo the test to discover whether or not the baby that you or your wife is carrying has Down syndrome. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's audio open lines this Wednesday, the 27th of June. A little bit later, NBC News reports that Rudolph Giuliani has spoken at Pat Robertson's Regent University. Apparently, in his address, he did not address the issues that make him so interesting, but also in some cases so unpalatable to the Pat Robertson-type voter, the issues of gay marriage and abortion. He simply didn't talk about them, and Pat Robertson didn't bring them up. We'll hear that story, get your reaction to it. It's audio open lines. You know, another question occurs to me about this Down syndrome testing. There are those who would have the test and say, I'm going to have the test, but I'm not going to abort. And there are those who would say, I don't want to know because I don't want to be tempted in that direction. Which are you? The test itself is neither right nor wrong. It's what people do with the information they get from the test. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's hear some of this from PBS Religion, Ethics, and News Weekly on early testing for Down syndrome, and then we'll go to the phones.
Whee!
On the playground
at recess, 6-year-old Benjamin Allard couldn't be happier.
Oh, it's a pig! Did it come?
And in Mrs. Logan's kindergarten class in Franklin, Massachusetts, with his circles and colors, Benjamin also flourishes.
So what are you going to take?
Pig!
Even though Benjamin has Down syndrome.
Just like any other child, you give them an opportunity and work with them, and they can do whatever they aspire to do.
Even if they are different.
Yeah.
Now, Beth Allard marvels at her son, but when she remembers what her pediatrician told her when she was pregnant at 36, she can only shudder.
She said, well, I just want to let you know what your life's going to be like. He's going to make your life hell. He won't be able to read or write or do anything. He may not be able to speak. The reason I considered terminating the pregnancy was, well, my doctor's telling me this, and I don't know much about it, so maybe she's right, and I really need to do this.
Largely, she says, because of her Catholic faith, Beth Allard decided to continue her pregnancy.
My concern is that if I do that...
7 years ago, faced with the prospect of giving birth to a child with Down syndrome and heart defects that often afflict those infants, Ellen Wickstead, 35, chose to abort her baby.
Now we're going to hear the rest of that story in just a moment, but I want to hear from you as well. It is now, and increasingly so, becoming standard operating procedure. And pediatricians and obstetricians are using the information taken from these kind of tests, prenatal testing for Down syndrome, and they're saying the risk is now low enough that we should be able to do this more often. And often they are counseling to terminate the pregnancy, to have an abortion if the child is discovered to have Down syndrome, or at least suspected on the basis of the test of having Down syndrome. Should Christians have these tests? Should they have them? And if so, why? And if not, why not? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Kathy's calling from St. Charles. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Well, this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart. We have 3 children, and our 3rd child has Down syndrome. But the thing, I guess, that's important to think about when you think about any of these issues of testing or screening for any medical condition is always thinking that the individual is a person first. You don't think of grandma as someone with high cholesterol and high blood pressure before you think of her as a person. And so, you know, where in our society do we have screenings for medical problems, and then when we find out the person has a medical problem, we take them out. I guess if we looked at it like that, you know, why is it in the womb different? It's still a person. The individual is still a person in the womb, and they're not a person with potential. I mean, they are a person that may have a great potential, and they may not, but they're a person regardless of their potential. And so we had the testing. I was going to turn 35 when I had my third pregnancy.
So you had the prenatal screening.
We had the triple test, and I really was not fully aware of what it was. I think they gave me the paperwork when I went in for an ultrasound, and I had to go to the bathroom real bad. I knew I needed to just sign the paper and get the ultrasound done, and so I could be. So that part of that would be over with. So I really didn't even read the information. They called me and told me that there might be a problem because I was going to turn 35 about a month or two months before I had my third child. And so we went and saw a geneticist at a large Catholic hospital in the St. Louis area. And he crunched the numbers and told us what our risk factors were, told us we could have amnio, but there are some risks with amnio. And with any test, he said, that involves human beings doing the test, there is, you know, just the fact that they might, you know, put your information in the wrong pile and give you somebody else's information. He said it has happened. So anyway, there were those kinds of things to consider. And then you could have a high-res ultrasound, which we did because it was at no risk to the baby. The amnio can cause you to miscarry because it can cause an infection. You would not be aware of it, and then the baby would miscarry, and that would be when you would know that you had an infection.
Did you test it after so you had the triple test, and mm-hmm. then you had the high-res
ultrasound,
and then what did they tell you on the basis of those?
Well, they looked at we were in the room with them, of course, when they were doing the ultrasound, and they were looking for markers, what they called markers for children with Down syndrome. Smaller femur bones, their legs tend to be shorter, they have certain markers. They have fatty tissue on the back of their neck. So they were looking for things like that. And they were also looking for heart defects or intestinal blockage because children with Down syndrome can have these things. And this is why we had the high-res done, was because if there were some health problems that the doctors needed to be aware of at the time of, you know, the baby's birth, we wanted to know which hospital we should have the baby in, you know, so they would, that way they could be better prepared.
So after all of this is said and done, and thanks be to God, your third child there is not only made it completely to term, but now is a full member of your family.
Right. What
would you counsel a Christian woman? Let's say she's at risk. A little older, what would you counsel a Christian woman to do when it comes to all the tests that are now and screening methods that are now available for stuff like Down syndrome? Would you say do it, don't do it?
Well, I would say, you know, it's just like testing for any other medical condition. If your reason for testing is to be better prepared to help with a medical condition, it's a little different with Down syndrome because of the effect of abortion. I mean, you don't go in, and people probably wouldn't go in for cholesterol screenings if they were afraid that if they tested positive for it, they were going to be taken out. You know?
I hate to laugh, but I think you've made a great point.
Right. And I guess the other thing is my son ended up having a whole lot of other things that were not any way related to his Down syndrome that they cannot test for. Autism, he ended up developing autism, and he's severely autistic. That has been much more difficult to deal with than anything with the Down syndrome. And they can't pretest for that. So, you know, what do you do with someone who maybe develops a drug or an alcohol problem? We've seen that in families.
Kathy, thank you.
You know, and that type of thing.
You have raised some excellent questions. Okay, first of all, I think her analogy is straight to the point. Look, let's not talk children in the womb. Let's talk children at the age when you're vaccinating them, you know, when they're in those ages from age 0 to 9. There are all sorts of conditions that people develop later in life. They don't show up right away, right? And there are bright people out there developing tests and screening methods for all of those things. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, propensity for things like heart disease or stroke, which some people are born with. And if we found a way to screen for them, at least at this point in society, we would not contemplate taking the child to the pediatrician with the prospect of, well, if we discover that they're going to have a propensity for adult onset diabetes, might as well just take them out now. Why want to live your life that way? We wouldn't even contemplate, not yet in our society, but the analogy is perfect. You see, the barrier of birth really is irrelevant in this. It makes no more sense to screen with the prospect of, you know, if we find something wrong, we're just going to scrap the whole project and start over again, which is what takes place with a lot of children who are tested for Down syndrome and discovered to be at high risk for it before birth. But it makes no more sense to do that than it would to say with the two-year-old at the pediatrician, well, this child has a possibility of developing high blood pressure. Well, who wants to live with that? And take the kid out. No more sense whatsoever. You're right, Kathy. And she also raises this question. Down syndrome is just one, but one condition for which we can test. And in the future, it's reasonable to assume that we'll be able to test for all sorts of other conditions, like how about juvenile diabetes? How about things like hypertension, heart disease? Who knows, maybe in the future, if we're sophisticated enough, even things like cancer or Alzheimer's. We can, a day may come when we can test for all of these things. There are people out there, you should know, in fertility clinics and in abortion clinics. Not that the two are the same thing. But in both of those circumstances, there are parents out there who are selecting for sex. And it's selective abortion taking places. How long do you think it is before, well, look, the kid's got a defect. And it may not be a defect that shows up until they're 75 years old and have Alzheimer's, but who wants to end that way? When any excuse for aborting a child is acceptable, then I guess it stands to reason any excuse for aborting a child will eventually be acceptable. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Ellen Wickstead, 35, chose to abort her baby.
I just couldn't imagine sort of having sort of all of the normal stresses of being a parent and on top of that, you know, raising a child with really, you know, potentially very severe physical disabilities as well as, you know, sort of an unknown degree of mental retardation. All I could envision was a spiral of, you know, sort of not being able to work in the studio, not being able to, you know, sort of have a normal life. What that led to logically was ending the pregnancy, which I felt was morally wrong.
Now, with two children born later, Ellen Wickstead says that decision to abort haunts her as much today as it tormented her then.
It was hard to get out of bed in the morning. It was hard to, function at all, really. And, you know, my husband was incredibly supportive, and it was still the hardest thing I think I've ever gone through.
Two women and two different responses to Down syndrome.
All right, those are the two different responses. And my question for you is, some people would say, let's test for everything. Well, okay, Kathy called in. She said, we tested, but for the purpose of preparing ourselves and the doctors for the needs this child would have. That's a very different thing from the woman we just heard, Mrs. Wick, who says, well, we tested, we found out there might be Down syndrome, and all I could picture was a life of inconvenience and difficulty. And so even though she believed abortion was wrong, and even though it troubled her and still does, she aborted her child. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. So is it really worth it? Some people would just say, I don't want to know. I don't want to be tempted. Matt calls from Palm Bay. Hi, Matt.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Doing well.
You know, over the course of a while, I've looked into this, the way this started, and this is eugenics. For anybody that wants to look it up, you can look up great articles on it on the internet pretty quickly.
What do you mean? Explain yourself, please.
Well, in eugenics, of course, the idea is to try and eliminate things. And science and doctors have done well with diseases that they've wanted to try and get rid of. Like today, we don't have smallpox anymore. It used to be rampant. It used to kill people. And through vaccination and other kinds of things, they were able to eliminate that. This is a great success that makes them want to push forward with other things to eliminate. Now, of course, Down syndrome is one of them that they could eliminate if they could screen for it and get everybody to just eventually get rid of it from the gene pool by aborting every Down's patient that would come along. Now, of course, if they can do that, then they can get rid of other things. My issue with this, for Christians especially, is to stop and think for a second, what else would somebody maybe want to eliminate? And who's going to make the decision what to eliminate? If they could actually pull this off the way I think that they believe they can.
Matt, thank you very much for the call. You remember the phrase, every child a wanted child? Remember that phrase? That was from the mid-90s. It was the, I think it was the sitting Surgeon General who used that phrase a lot, every child a wanted child. She didn't make it up, by the way. It really was a part of a much, much older movement of eugenics. It was kind of the selling point, the selling phrase, the motto of the eugenics movement, which is just a simple way of saying we're trying to improve the gene pool of the human race. Now, we know where eugenics went in the case of things like Nazi Germany or even some things that took place in the United States as well. And it used to fly under just kind of the really more honest mindset that, look, there are people in this world who are better genetic stock than others, and the best way to improve the genetic stock of the whole human race is to see to it that those who are of inferior genetic stock don't reproduce. So the earliest advocates in the United States of eugenics were in favor of a couple things, birth control and mandatory sterilization. And guess who they wanted to have sterilized? Men and women of who they deemed to be of inferior genetic stock. Now, they didn't even use the term genetics in the same way that we are today. They weren't thinking about genes and chromosomes. They were just thinking about breeding. Breeding people like you breed pigs, or like you breed cattle, or like you breed for a show dog. Right? Or for that matter, as you breed plants, like the corn that grows around my house. You always want the best result, and it only stood to reason for them that if we want the best result, we more conscientiously breed the human race. That's where every child a wanted child came from. Now, when the then Surgeon General said every child a wanted child, she was talking about abortion, which was also advocated by the earliest advocates of eugenics in the United States. Now, what she envisioned was a day when we could say, as a society, we have eliminated unwanted children from our society. They wouldn't say that, of course. That sounds so harsh, doesn't it? So she said it the other way. Every child a wanted child. But what it really meant was, through abortion, we eliminate all unwanted children. In her mind, the way you get to a society where every child is a wanted child is by aborting the unwanted children. Now, what Matt brings up is, we select for a lot of things. And maybe there are people out there who say, look, let's just get rid of Down syndrome. Let's eliminate it from society. Let's have a society where one day we can stand up and say, we've eliminated Down syndrome. How? Well, by aborting every infant that shows any chance of having it. And if you can eliminate from society Down syndrome by this cruel and inhumane method, well, you can test for other things too. In the early days of eugenics, they thought that they could determine whether someone would turn out to be a criminal or a murderer or a rapist or lazy. And they wanted to, through sterilization and abortion and birth control, eliminate those ills from society. Not a lot has changed. We've just become more sophisticated in the way we think about it, not sophisticated. Sophisticated in the way we talk about it, and a lot blurrier in the way we think about it.
To Down syndrome, a genetic abnormality in which an extra chromosome generally results in mild or moderate retardation and other health problems.
How about this foot over here? Bend that knee.
Every year, 5,000 babies are born with the defect, many to older women. Recently, using ultrasound and blood tests, doctors developed a new technique to identify the condition in the first trimester. Advocates for the disabled, however, worry that the tests, administered before some feel human life has fully begun, will be used to abort more Down syndrome babies.
What troubles me is this first trimester test just is like a missile that targets children with Down syndrome. What if other children aren't born with Down syndrome, and then maybe Lucy will be an endangered species?
The light of Beverly Beckham's life in Canton, Massachusetts, is her two-year-old granddaughter, Lucy, her Lulu Bell, who has Down syndrome.
Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We're getting close to a break here. It's Audio Open Lines, listening to PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story on prenatal testing for Down syndrome. Now, the new stage of the test is even earlier, and some think more accurate. What kind of a world do you want to live in? It's a good question to consider. What kind of a world do you want to live in? A world where there are no Down syndrome children. Someone says, well, golly, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't that be nice? Yes, but if the means of getting there is we just abort them before they're born, that's how we get a world with no Down syndrome children. Well, that works for a lot of things. You can eliminate all sorts of unwanted people. When does other physical abnormalities or deformities get thrown into the mix? A world where no one, where everyone is a perfect physical specimen. Well, how did you achieve it? We achieved it by aborting all the less than perfect physical specimens early. If you breed cattle, they just call that culling the herd. Is that what we are, the human race, a herd to be culled and bred toward our own idea of physical or medical perfection? It's Audio Open Lines. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll take your phone calls, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Coming up after another half hour of Audio Open Lines, and as time permits, we'll get to an NBC report on Rudolph Giuliani speaking at Pat Robertson's Regent University, also some anti-Mormon rhetoric that has been leveled at Mitt Romney, and a Reuters report on the makeup of the new Supreme Court. Well, it's not so new, but newly seated Supreme Court. Some people are saying decidedly conservative. Some people saying split. Who knows? Helen Hull Hitchcock will join us in the last half hour from Women for Faith and Family to talk about a recent story in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch on pro-choice Roman Catholic politicians and what the bishops of the Catholic Church in the United States are having to say about that. Some of them are being rather outspoken. Others are calling for a more gentle approach to these Roman Catholic politicians that fly in the face of their church's teaching on abortion and other life issues. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 27th of June. Your phone calls on the other side of this break. Please be patient. We'll be right back.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.